This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Duke Energy is making the shift away from coal for its energy production, filling the place, natural gas. Energy industry touts natural gas as environmentally friendly because it burns cleaner than coal. But critics point out that it leaks during extraction and transportation and storage, and therefore natural gas can actually accelerate global warming. Joining me now is Jason DeBruin. He's WUNC's data reporter and joins us to talk more about the role of natural gas. Welcome back, Jason.
Hi, Frank, and happy Star Wars Day.
It's May the 4th be with you. So let me ask you this about natural gas and Duke Energy now moving toward trying to replace those coal plants with natural gas.
Yep.
What's behind it?
Yep. Last year, big acquisition. They bought Piedmont Natural Gas for $5 billion, so a big acquisition there. They're moving towards energy production from natural gas. You know, even just in 2005, 61% of all the energy that they produced came from coal and only 5% from natural gas. Well, already that's up to more of a 50-50 split between the two, and natural gas is going to make up about one-third of all energy production from Duke Energy by 2026, and coal is going to be reduced to about a quarter. So definitely moving toward natural gas.
A number of reasons for that transition.
One, it's cheap. It's cheaper to get out of the ground. It burns cleaner. I know we'll get into that in a minute. It's a reliable source of energy. It's basically a good way to make electricity.
Burns cleaner. Let's stick with that now. It burns cleaner, meaning when we produce that, of course, carbon dioxide is produced in the burning of coal. Greenhouse gas, bad for the environment. Not so much with natural gas, right?
Right. That's exactly right. And the caveat here is that it burns cleaner. So it essentially burns up completely. There are very few side products. The problem is, as you mentioned in the intro, when it's transported from, you know, probably the Marcellus Shale, but other places, in pipelines and then stored, natural gas contains a lot of methane. And methane, when it's emitted into the atmosphere, is a potent greenhouse gas. It traps a lot of heat. So although when natural gas is burned, there are very few byproducts, as there are with coal, it's that, you know, earlier steps in the process where methane escapes into the atmosphere and then contributes to global warming.
All right. So if I'm an advocate of natural gas and I like the fact that it burns cleaner than coal, can't I just say fix the leaks and then we won't have this problem?
Well, yeah, one would think so. And in fact, you know, really, if you think about it, the interests are here aligned, are aligned here, because if natural gas contains methane, well, natural gas is what you burn to create electricity, and you would think then that the energy companies would not want to lose the product that they end up burning to make what they sell. I mean, it's basically more electricity that they can sell. What it comes down to is sort of a cost-benefit analysis is that, you know, these pipes are quite long, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline being one of these. They're quite long. You know, there are many different parts. And natural gas certainly contains corrosive materials, so it sort of eats the pipeline from the inside out. And maintaining these pipelines and maintaining these storage facilities are quite expensive. So there's sort of, if some is leaked out, it's sort of the cost of doing business. And okay, fine, you know, from a cost-benefit analysis of what you're trying to sell, that makes sense. But of course, environmental groups will say, hey, okay, I see that you're making, you know, cost-benefit analysis on what you're selling, but hey, you got to think about the environment too, and this methane that's leaked into the environment is, you know, accelerating our move towards global.
Well, let's talk about that acceleration and the cost-benefit to in terms of environmental quality. We know what burning coal does to us. Health reasons, I mean, apart from even the impact on the ozone and greenhouse gas, it affects our health. It results in early death. And you can go to the EPA's website and see what suspended particulates do to life expectancy. What about the cost benefit in terms of this escape methane? Can I do a one-to-one comparison, compare the cost of burning coal environmentally versus the cost of losing methane and what that means to us?
It's very difficult to do an exact comparison like this. And if you talk to folks at like the Sierra Club or other environmentalists, they'll say that there's not ever been a comprehensive study that's done. A number that you'll throw around is that methane is 20 times as potent as CO2, excuse me. And that looks over a span of 100 years. Now, the reason you do that is because CO2 stays around in the environment for roughly 100 years, about a century. Methane, although it's more potent, it stays in the environment for a much shorter amount of time. So comparing the amount of heat that methane traps to the amount of coal that methane traps over 100 years, methane traps about 20 times as much. environmentalists will say, okay, that's not a fair comparison because methane will disappear out of the environment after about 20 years. So in those first 20 years, and particularly in those first 10 years, methane traps a lot more heat than does CO2. So they say that there's this compounding effect. You trap a whole lot more heat in those first 10 years. Then you have things like, you know, melting ice caps. Water, as we also know, obviously traps more heat than does ice. So then it sort of builds on itself, and you get sort of to this point of, you know, a tipping point or a point of no return in terms of global warming much sooner than you would with CO2.
Right, and that's an important point, that if you have this much more potent gas like methane going into the environment, accelerating the greenhouse effect, you get to that tipping point. Let's emphasize what happens there. This is the dynamic that goes into place if we were to stop burning everything and completely stop burning all of the things and putting into the atmosphere those greenhouse gases. There comes a point at which the environment itself is producing an effect that can do us all in.
Yeah, this is the doomsday projection that some environmentalists have. You'll hear some say that we've basically already reached that if we shuttered every coal plant, every natural gas plant, that the Earth would continue to warm on its own. You know, others aren't quite so alarmist, but many scientists do agree that at some point we're going to reach this tipping point where even with our best efforts, there is nothing we can do.
What about that? There have been some advances in terms of extraction. This had been controversial, fracking, one way of extracting natural gas. That has become controversial. There are advances in something called horizontal drilling. Tell us about the impact that's had on the shift toward natural gas.
Right. And it's a huge impact. I mean, that's basically the reason why you're seeing this big push towards natural gas, because it's so much cheaper to get out of the ground. So instead of having, you know, expensive coal mines and instead of having expensive natural gas wells, you now have a horizontal drilling where from one well pad, you can, you know, if you think about it, basically go in 360 degrees. So you have one well pad, you drill down one time, and then you drill over in many different directions. And you can get a whole lot of natural gas out of the ground from that one well pad. So it's much cheaper to get out of the ground now. And that's what's, you know, really contributing towards this shift.
There was a time when there was even debate among environmentalists over whether, at least as a transition, natural gas made more sense. And there was a moment at which President Obama, even the Sierra Club, said, we have to face the reality that's on the ground right now. We're not ready to go renewable. Therefore, natural gas is a good bridge technology. But even now, the environmental groups seem to be changing their tune.
Well, they have. And the bridge fuel, as it was so called, was a bridge to renewable energy. You know, the ideal being that we shouldn't, environmentalists will say we shouldn't have any energy from coal or from natural gas because we can get it from solar, from wind, et cetera. The problems there are that storage at this point is still quite expensive. I'm sure you've talked about on your show about the reduction in price in solar farms, for example, and getting energy from solar has gotten to be quite cost effective. The problem is that right now, storing that energy is very difficult. So whenever there are peak usage hours, like a cold January morning and you want a hot shower, you know, the sun's not shining yet, but you want that hot shower or you want your heater to work in your house, unless you have an expensive home battery right now, you're not going to get that energy. There are promises of storage coming down in price significantly. Elon Musk and others are working towards this effect. But sort of getting back to your question, yes, natural gas was supposed to be a bridge to renewables. But now with more that we've learned, particularly on this methane issue, they're now sort of calling it a bridge to nowhere.
We are talking about the safety of natural gas today on The State of Things. Talking with data reporter Jason DeBruin today about not only the safety of natural gas, but then again, this sort of the idea of the bridge technology. On the one hand, it makes sense. On the other hand, you know, isn't it a kind of moral hazard? The longer you spend with fossil fuels, the longer you put off the inevitable investment. And as we've seen in this state, a reversal in our commitment to renewables and tax credits that promote the inevitable. This is an inevitable technology. We will run out of fossil fuels. Are there critics who say that promoting bridge technology delays the research into the inevitable or renewable resources?
Certainly that is a critique. But even the Sierra Club is honest about, we can point our finger at the Duke Energies and the Piedmont Natural Gases and other energy companies, but in many ways we also have to point the finger back at ourselves, because there are very few people who think about their energy usage. I mean, we get home and we want it to be cool inside if it's July. And, you know, we get home and we do our dishes and we do our laundry or whatever. Certainly there are a lot of advances in smarter appliances where there's, you know, sensors. You set your dishwasher to go off in the morning and then the sensor detects whenever there's a lull in energy usage and then sort of uses it at that exact point, which again sort of gets back to that battery storage. We just don't have the technology today to store a lot of energy, so you sort of have to make it when you need to use it, and that's the problem. But getting back to what I said just a second ago, you know, we do have to look at ourselves as well. We need to be better consumers of electricity and better consumers, especially of the timing of our electricity, so that as then customers, we can sort of put the pressure on Duke Energy to, make a smarter grid and give us energy at a more sort of spread out time. And that will reduce our dependence on both natural gas, coal, and nuclear as well.
Talking to WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin today on the state of things. Jason, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
You can find links to more of Jason's reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, are you ready to listen to your mother? We're joined by three writers who share their stories of motherhood on stage this weekend. We'll do it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.